This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Spotlight on eWomen, the place for everything eWomen Network. Entrepreneur, enterprising, enlightening, and exciting. Please welcome your eWomen host, Phyllis Smith.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight on eWomen Network. Yes, I am Phyllis Smith. So we all have beliefs. I mean, we are raised to believe certain things, like eat your broccoli so you can grow up strong, or do unto others as we would want others to do unto you. But as we reach adulthood, oftentimes there is a gap between what we believe and what we are actually doing. So today is a new beginning. My guest today is going to show you how to start the process of recognizing where those gaps lie in your life and begin to take action on closing them. I am honored to introduce to you one of my most favorite people I've met while working at eWomen Network. He is the co-founder and former CEO of Franklin Covey, prolific author, world-renowned speaker, and just all around great guy. He spoke at the International eWomen Network Conference and Business Expo a couple of years back and will be speaking there again this August. So, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you my friend, Hiram Smith.
Hey, how you doing, Phyllis? Great to be with you today.
Yes, and you're in your gorgeous ranch in Utah, I assume?
I am.
Yes,
it's a little
beautiful
piece of heaven right here.
I know it is. So, okay, so you have a new book out, and it's called The Three Gaps. And the foreword
right.
of your new book was written by Richard Winwood. He's the co-founder of Franklin Covey and developer of the famous Franklin Day Planner. And he describes
right.
in this foreword the George Bernard Shaw story of Man and Superman, a story of Don Juan who discovers that although hell in this story is a beautiful, pleasant, easy place, Don Juan chooses to go to heaven instead because he says to be in hell is to drift, to be in heaven is to steer. So tell us what that means to you and how it applies to your new book.
Well, it really is kind of the heartbeat of the book. And it's, to me, it's the heartbeat of what makes a life worth living or not. I mean, imagine yourself in an ocean in a raft, and you have absolutely no control over where that raft is going. In fact, there's a great book out called Unbroken, true story about this Louis Zamperini kid who his plane went down in the Pacific during the Second World War, and he and his co-pilot and another guy drifted for 47 days. One of them died, and the two of them survived, but they ended up drifting 2,000 miles and were captured on a Japanese-held island. So it wasn't, there was really a bad end of the story. When you drift, there's usually not a good end of the story. And to steer means I'm going to take control of my life. I'm going to decide where I'm going to go. I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. I'm going to decide what I believe. And, you know, when we're in control of that, then we're most likely going to have a wonderful whole life. But a lot of people spend their lives drifting, and it's awful, and they don't like it. But how do we change that? That's why I wrote the book, The Three Gaps.
So why do we drift? What happens to us?
Well, I think we drift because initially it's easier, you know, to make decisions about who I am, where I'm going, what I want to accomplish, who I want to associate with. Those are all sometimes tough decisions. And so it's just easier to drift. And so we get into the drifting mode, and then our life ends up drifting. And then we wonder when we're 65 and about to retire why we're unhappy. And, you know, why our marriage is probably not very good. And, you know, why my relationship with my family isn't great. It's because we've totally let other people control our lives. It's really awful, frankly.
Yeah. Now, you learned a very, very hard lesson that is related to this. You had a profound loss that no parent should ever have to experience. You lost your daughter and young granddaughter in a car accident. tell us about that experience and how that, what lesson you learned from that and that you now share with others in terms of the gaps and steering and having control and steering as opposed to drifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a very difficult experience. That happened back in 1995. And, you know, you always think you're going to outlive your kids, you know. And especially your grandkids, you think you're going to outlive your grandkids. But, you know, there was a very nasty accident. Both daughters were in the car and the granddaughter, and one daughter and the granddaughter were killed. And I discovered a principle that I had known for many years, but it really became a profound living experience. And the principle is pain is inevitable, misery is optional. And that, as I stood there that day in the hospital, and I had to go down and clean out the car, and the car was a mess, and I really started to think about that. That principle just came screaming into my brain and my chest and my whole system. You know, the fact is, we're not going to get through the mortal experience without some pain. All of us will have pain while we're on the earth. How we choose to deal with that pain is ultimately totally dependent on whether or not we're able to close these gaps. I really believe that. And if we close the gaps, then, you know, we are most likely going to choose not to be miserable. Doesn't mean we're not going to have some pain, because the pain I experienced at the loss of my daughter and granddaughter was unbelievable. I mean, it was excruciating. But my wife and I made a conscious decision that we were not going to allow this to destroy us. And, you know, one of the things you'd be surprised at, I was surprised at, the number of divorces that happen after a couple have lost a child is unbelievable. Because they can't deal with the pain, sometimes they blame one another for what happened. So the divorce rate is really high. That's because people are choosing to be miserable. And you know, you've been around miserable people. It's not fun to be around miserable people because they make everybody miserable around them.
It really had a profound impact on me. Do you think people identify with that misery too? I mean, there's like, who are they without the misery? I think some people choose it for that reason.
Well, you know, some people want to think they're taking advantage of it. And so they're miserable, wanting everybody to feel bad for them. And, you know, what everybody else wants to do is move on. And, you know, I tell a story in the book. I just tell it really quick, Phyllis. I spoke at my daughter's funeral, my granddaughter's funeral, and in early morning of the day of the funeral, I'm thinking, what am I going to say? Public speaking is not a problem for me, but, man, I've got to speak at my own daughter's funeral. Anyway, there's a picture in my office that I've had there for 30 years, and it's a picture of a scene in a it's a Western scene where a wagon train is pulled off, and you see a mom and a dad standing near a shallow grave. It's in the middle of the winter, and they're burying a child. And I've looked at that picture 1,000 times, but this time when I looked at the picture, I saw something I'd never seen before, never noticed before. It was always there, but in the background were some other wagons, and people were sitting in the wagons, patiently waiting with the reins in their hands. And all of a sudden I realized what the pioneers knew that they had to do for survival. They had to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And they were waiting for the burial to get over. And they said, you know what, we got to move on, because if we don't move on, we're going to freeze to death and die. And so moving on was absolutely critical to their survival. And that's true today. I mean, I thought about it, that the funeral, everybody, all the wagons were around the church. Only there were cars this time and no horses, but there were wagons, and people came and they paid respect, but then everybody got in their cars afterwards and they moved on, because we have to move on. And that's the whole idea about choosing not to be miserable.
And you also talk about how you used that analogy when you were asked, you and Stephen Covey were asked to speak to a group of survivors and families of survivors from 9/11 tragedy. And you used that as an example as well. So, yes, moving on. It's hard, but you're. It's like again, you're steering. You're in control. Doesn't mean you're not going to feel grief and pain and sorrow. We go through that, but we also are here and we have to survive. So you're referring to your book, The Three Gaps. You refer the gaps you're referring to are the belief gap, the time gap, and the value gap. So let's start with the belief gap. How do we experience that?
Well, the belief gap, the question that we have to answer, there's a question that goes with each of the gaps. And the question that we have to answer in the belief gap is there a gap between what I believe is true and what is actually true? And if there is a gap, there's going to be pain. But by the way, whenever there's gaps in any of the three gaps, there is always pain. And if I want to experience inner peace, which is really the net end of what we want to accomplish, I think what everybody on the planet wants, they want to have some inner peace in their lives, and the only way to do it is to close these gaps. And so the belief gap is, you know, for example, let's suppose I believe that gravity doesn't work. Okay, now that may cause me some trouble at some point.
Yeah.
You know, if I believe that, do you see what I'm saying? And so, if my belief system doesn't line up with reality, I'm going to have a problem. And we discovered a model. And one of the things that we do in the book, we offer a simple blueprint on how to close each gap. And the blueprint for the belief gap. We now call the belief model. We used to call it the reality model, but it's really a belief model. And we teach the idea of sitting in front of you. There is a window that hangs in front of your face, and on this window, everybody puts all their beliefs. Okay, the principles they believe are true. Now, some of those beliefs may be true, some of them may not. But the question is, the thing we have to realize is, I believe those things are true, and if I do believe those things are true, they will impact my behavior. And so I get a belief on my belief window. Let's suppose I believe that my self-worth is dependent on my possessions. I believe that. To have value, I got to have a lot of stuff. If I believe that's true, Phyllis, what am I going to spend my life doing? Acquiring stuff. Are you with me?
Yep.
And I know a lot of people who have mountains of stuff, and they're miserable, you know?
Yeah.
And because they've been working on the belief that somehow if I have a Rolls Royce and a big swimming pool and a 30,000 square foot house, that I have value as a human being. Wow. And eventually they discover, you know, that's really probably not what gives me value as a human being. Here's another one. This is a great one for e-women. Let's suppose I believe that men are better than women. You know what? And you can ask yourself, do you know anybody that believes that? Oh, man, yeah. Well, if I believe that men are better than women and I show up at work tomorrow and my new boss is a woman, have I got a problem? Or we can say, does she have a problem? Oh yeah, she has a problem, but it'll be short term. She'll take care of me fast, you know.
Or even more so, Hiram, if a woman entrepreneur, that's what eWomen Network is. If you even owning your own business, if you believe that men are better, smarter, worth more, then how will that affect your business?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so the core, the issue is, how do I discover that I've got a belief on my belief window, I believe something that is not working for me? And the question that now we have to be asked is, when I do something that causes pain, I got to ask myself the question, will the results of this behavior meet my needs over time? And if the answer is no, then I've got something wrong with my belief system. I've got to change a belief on my belief window. It's not a complicated thing how to do it. It's not easy. I'm not going to suggest it's easy. It's simple, but not easy. But if I have that belief on my belief window that men are better than women, boy, I'm going to be doing things that are not going to work for me over time. Am I mature enough to recognize that?
All right. We have to take a short break. Coming up, Hiram Smith is going to talk about the other two of the three gaps from his book, The Three Gaps, and what you can do to start working on closing those gaps today, right after this.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. Are you ready to step into all of your greatness, to release the confidence that lies within, to stop playing small and settling for mediocrity? If so, then you need to join us at our eWomen Network International Conference and Business Expo in Dallas this year on August 4th through the 7th. There will be hundreds of women entrepreneurs from all over the world waiting to meet you to share knowledge, wisdom, and even partnerships. Our world-renowned speakers will teach, inspire, and motivate you to greater heights. Plus, the food, the fun, and entertainment at the best party in town will rock all of your senses. Look, no one makes it alone. So it's time to stop trying to be the COE, the chief of everything, and step into your role as CEO. The eWomen Network Conference is the perfect place to make that happen. Register at eWomenNetwork.com.
Welcome back to Spotlight on eWomen. Here's your host, Phyllis Smith.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Phyllis Smith talking with Hiram Smith. He's the co-founder and former CEO of Franklin Covey, among other things, international speaker, author, a man of walking wisdom. And I just could talk to Hiram forever. You know, Hiram, you often talk about inner peace, that's kind of your mission behind everything. That was the mission behind the Franklin Planner. It wasn't about selling, calendars or journals, or it was really about helping people achieve inner peace. So why is that so important to you?
Well, it is important because I believe that that's what the human being basically wants. In fact, the central theme of our time management seminar at Franklin Covey for 35 years was the acquisition and maintenance of inner peace. And people were stunned by that and said, wait a second, I thought it was coming to a time management class. And I said, well, time management is our Trojan horse, but what we really want is inner peace. It's like saying, you know, Black & Decker sells 340,000 quarter-inch drills every year, but nobody in America wants a quarter-inch drill. What they want is a quarter-inch hole. And so, you know, when people go to a time management class, what do they want? They don't want to just, you know, manage their time. What they really want is control of their lives, and control of your life brings inner peace. And that's why I came up with the definition, and I write this in the book, that inner peace is having serenity, balance, and harmony in my life achieved through the disciplined closing of three gaps. And that's what happens when we close these gaps. You close your belief gap and suddenly your belief system is lined up with reality. You have a right to inner peace. You know, if you close that time gap, the second gap we talked about, you have a right to inner peace, and people want that. And I think that's why Franklin became so big so fast.
Speaking of the time gap, so we were talking about the belief gap. There is a gap. Is there a gap between what I believe is true and what is true? And now the time gap. Tell us, what is the question we should be asking ourselves in relation to the time gap?
Well, the question here is there a gap between what I did today and what I said I'd do today? Now, when I say that, most people think, oh, garbage, yeah, that's, yeah. There's usually a big gap there. Well, why is there a gap there? You know, because we haven't learned to manage the events that make up our lives. And so, you know, one of the points I make here in the time gap, which is really important, is when you hear somebody say, I don't have time, you have just heard the biggest lie on the planet. They're lying to you. Now, why? Because you and I have the same amount of time. We're both given a check for 24 hours every single day. We have to spend every second. We're not going to get one more, nor can we save it. That means when we say I don't have time, we're lying. What we're really saying, for example, if you said to me today, hi, would you have lunch with me? And I said, Phyllis, I'd love to have lunch with you today, but I just don't have time. Big lie. Mm. What am I really saying to you? I'm saying that I value something else more than having lunch with you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because the fact is, you know, Warren Buffett has the same 24 hours that you and I have. He's worth $65 billion. So what did he learn that I haven't learned? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's learned to look at the events that make up his life and place a value on each one. You know, for example, most people, when they get to their desk, you know, the first thing they do is they turn their computer on and says, you've got mail, and they're screwed for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
They're sucked into their email. Well, is that really the most important thing I can do with my time? Maybe I need to respond to some phone calls. Maybe I need to prepare for a meeting. Maybe I need to prepare a report that's 2 days overdue for my boss. And it's all about choice. I can wrap up the whole time gap in one simple idea. It's all about choice. What am I going to do? The fact that I am speaking to you on your show right now means that to me, this is the most absolute valuable thing I could do with this 30 minutes today. Period. Mm. And how do we know that? Because that's what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
That I'm so fortunate.
That's
and the truth is, you know, we always say if we've just wasted our time, we don't get that time back. That's it. The clock's ticking, the world is spinning,
right.
You're not getting younger. So how are you going to use your time in the most valuable way?
Right, and you know what, the issue is opportunity cost. You know, if I gave you $10,000 and said, Phyllis, you got to spend this by 4 o'clock today, any money you haven't spent, I'm going to take away, what would you spend it on? Let's say you say, well, I'll buy a car. Okay, well, maybe you can buy a car for 10 grand. But the minute you decide to spend the 10 grand on a car, by virtue of that decision, what have you decided not to spend the money on? Everything else. And time is identical. When I decide to spend 1 hour watching TV, I have decided not to spend that hour on everything else. And if people get that simple idea in mind, then all of a sudden watching TV for 4.5 hours, which is the average TV time for the adult in America, 8 hours for kids a day, wow, what could I do with that time that might be more beneficial to me? So the whole time gap is, am I really making the choices that make sense to get control of my life? That's how that gap gets closed.
And I think that really nicely brings us into the third gap, the value gap, because to make that choice, you have to determine what has the most value. So tell us about the third gap and the question we should be asking ourselves.
Right. Well, this is a big one. This is probably the most important, but the question here is there a gap between what I'm doing and what I value most? For example, suppose I value being physically fit, but I weigh 350 pounds. Is there a gap? Yeah. Because I think I ought to be in pretty good shape, but I weigh 350 pounds, so there's a gap. If I want inner peace in my life, what have I got to do? I've got to close that gap. I've got to cut down to 3 meals a day, no more beer, french fries, stuff. I've got to lose some weight. Let's suppose I value being financially okay, but I'm $1 million in debt. So there's a gap between what matters to me, being financially okay, and the debt. And if I want inner peace, how do I close that gap? This is not rocket science, Phyllis.
Yeah.
And so what we encourage people here to do here is we encourage them to identify their governing values, write a written statement describing what they mean to them, and then set them in some kind of priority. Now, that sounds so simple, but it is not easy.
Mm.
And the question we ask when you identify what your values are, we take them through a quick scenario where we put an I-beam across the north rim of the Grand Canyon, 300 feet long, 4 inches wide, and we asked the question, what would you cross that I-beam for? Would you cross for $1,000? No. Would you cross for $10,000? No way. Would you cross if I had your two-year-old on my side and I'll drop your two-year-old if you don't get over here right now? Yeah, I think I would. All of a sudden now, we start finding out what exactly would I cross that I-beam for? The answer to that question comes up in the form of your governing values. And we ask people to write their own personal constitutions. When I've identified my values, I've written what they mean to me, and I've prioritized them, I have just completed my own personal constitution. This country was built on a constitution. After the Revolutionary War, they sat in a room saying, you know, what would we cross an I-beam for? They just crossed a hellacious I-beam, the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
And they said, well, things like the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, all that stuff came up. They wrote paragraphs describing them. Now we have our constitution. No law in this country is ever ratified until it's measured against our constitution for rightness. If you know what, is that what's the word I'm looking for? For congruence. That's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
Congruence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When what we do is congruent with what we value, we feel wonderful.
So, considering that closing the gap essentially is so that we can achieve inner peace, the gaps, I say plural, that's the belief gap, the time gap, the value gap. Where can you just quickly, because we're running out of time, what is one thing that we can start doing today to begin to move towards that inner peace in terms of closing these gaps?
Well, I tell you the one big thing, I'd start with a time gap, and I would encourage people to take 10 to 15 minutes every single day and plan their day. That sounds like so simple, almost stupid simple, but 87% of the American business people, men and women, do not do that. They do not take time to plan their day, which means they're not looking at what their gaps are. If I sit down with myself every day and say, okay, what matters most to me today from my governing values, from my to-do list, from, you know, all this stuff that's swirling around me. If I'll take time to sit back and take a look at that, the impact that would have on their personal productivity and inner peace would blow them away. So that's the one thing I would say. Sit down and plan your day, because during that time, you'll end up doing your constitution.
All right, that's a good place to start. Hiram, thank you so much. We could go on all day. If you'd like to own a copy of Hiram Smith's book, The Three Gaps, just go to the number three gaps.com. And Hiram also, he also offers training there and you can and all kinds of stuff. So and he's written many other books that you can access there as well. If you want to see Hiram speak at the eWomen Network Conference in Dallas between August 4th and the 7th this year, along with many other great speakers and amazing women entrepreneurs who you need to know and who need to know you, just visit eWomenNetwork.com. Hiram, thank you again for joining us, and I'll see you there.
My pleasure.
Time's up for now. If you want more enlightening conversations that could change your life, visit EWNRadioNetwork.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.